Theatrical Shenanigans with
Tony Targan.
Hello there, and welcome along to this second episode in our third season of Theatrical Shenanigans, and I'm thrilled you could be here with me. I, as always, am your host, Rachel Feeney-Williams, here with you with another audio play and another fabulous guest to discuss it with. My guest this week is practically part of the fixtures and fittings here on Theatrical Shenanigans, having performed as a voice actor twice in season two, a panellist on The Panel Presents back in January, and he makes his debut as a featured playwright at the end of this season. In addition to that, he's a community theatre actor, director and writer from Michigan, getting into playwriting 9 years ago, with a fabulous collection of work that's entertained audiences across the country. He's also no stranger to the world of journalistic writing as a retired sports writer for ESPN.com and Michigan Runners magazine. He's also a keen runner himself, having run the Boston Marathon multiple times, so I'm thrilled he could join me. Welcome, Tony Targan.
Great to be here, Rachel.
Pleasure to have you. So, as always, I go way back to the beginning with, how did you get started?
Well, I've been involved in community theater as an actor and director for about a dozen years, and I guess it was seeing some other local productions of plays that were written that I thought, maybe I could do that. So there was a one-act festival that I was acting in locally, and then the next year I decided to write and submit my first 10-minute play, which basically was, it was called Synchronicity, and it involved, at a certain point in the play, something happens, and after that point, all of the dialogue is song lyrics. which was fun putting together, but I learned a lot about plays. Like, it's generally not a good idea to have 10 characters in a 10-minute play, but it was my first time and it was a lot of fun, but that sort of got me started.
And you've covered the trifecta of roles as an actor, a director and a writer. So do you have a preferred hat that you wear, or is it kind of an equal labor of love?
Right now I'm involved in directing. So that's sort of front and center of my mind. And I think if I had to say, the most gratifying thing is to actually write a play that you get to see performed and then see your words come to life on stage. So to me, that's the ultimate.
I always think that's what gives us a little bit of our God complex. Just sat there looking at them going, you're only saying what you're saying because I wrote it.
Right. I could make you disappear.
Yeah. You say stage in real life, don't make me mad or I'll write you into a play and then I'll have you killed in a very gruesome way.
Right. No, it is an interesting way to both live out fantasies and explore situations. Even things that happen in real life that you can imagine. I think most plays have some grain of truth or experience that maybe was the germ or the seed of the idea. And then the playwright just uses his or her imagination and goes from there.
So many people have said this before, that it's a kind of therapy in itself. You work out quite a lot of your emotions and your feelings towards a certain, say, person or situation.
Yeah, I wrote a recent short play that was based entirely on an overheard conversation at a restaurant between a young couple who were obviously trying to take the next step in their relationship, but it became very clear that maybe they weren't as compatible as they thought they were. So I was overhearing and trying not to eavesdrop, but I couldn't really help it. And then I used a lot of what I heard as material for the play.
You imagine if they ever saw it and somebody went, hang on a
minute. Wait a second. Well, this happened in Italy, so it's not likely that I'll see them again. But
okay. And obviously, when it comes to playwriting, which is obviously holds a dear place for both of us, do you have a preferred genre or style, or is it a bit of everything?
Definitely comedy. I like the instant gratification of getting an audience to laugh. And I think when you get into a rhythm with comedy, it can come very quickly. I think drama takes a lot more work and thought and emotional investment, whereas comedy, you can sort of scratch the surface of something and still tickle somebody's funny bone without necessarily having to require therapy for them. So.
No, some say it is quite a hard genre to write in, though, because you never know what some people will find funny and what won't. I mean, you just look at the number of varieties of comedians out there, and that shows you how many different styles people will find funny and people won't.
That's true. And certainly the actor's delivery and timing really affects whether something lands as a joke. Something that I write that I think is hysterical, if it's not delivered the same way or with the same timing, it can either be funny or not funny. So you're right, it's tricky. I think comedy is more, you have more of an innate sense of humor, and all of it is work if you're doing it well, but to me at least, comedy comes more naturally.
And it's also dependent quite a lot on your audience as well. So if you write quite rude style humor, there are certain people that won't approve or won't enjoy that just because of, who they are. They don't enjoy it, and that's their prerogative. But you'll have some audiences who'll find it, as you say, hilariously funny. It's a big risk.
I think that, I try to write for a broad audience because I want to be, I want to have my plays performed. I think you can sort of tell from a lot of times from the submission guidelines, they'll tell you, no foul language, or they'll tell you anything's fair game. So you can sort of sense a little bit, but I guess my sense of it is I'm going to write the way I want to write, and if they like it, they'll accept it, and if they don't, they won't. But
Oh yeah,
I don't.
you don't want to kind of almost censor yourself for the basis of possibly getting chosen for a submission opportunity. I don't think
Right.
there's anyone who wants to write that way.
Right. But I do think, like, I prefer comedians like Jerry Seinfeld or people who don't rely on profanity for a cheap laugh. I do think that I prefer more intellectual humor or things that make people think. And I think comedy can be written at many levels. I think that's why Disney films are so successful, because obviously they're appealing to kids, but there's a lot of humor in there that parents will get that the kids won't. So I think if you're strategic about it, you can write something that might contain even sexual innuendo that somebody's not going to get. But the right audience will find it funny still.
But it's the same with we have pantomimes over here, and a lot of the spectacle and the slapstick and the silly costumes and the bright sets and that kind of thing, that's aimed at kids. But then a lot of the actual dialogue is aimed at grown-ups, because you read through the script and you think, this is meant to be a family show. And then you realize, hang on a minute, kids aren't going to understand this.
Well, I guess my sense of humor comes from when I was a teenager, I watched a lot of Monty Python's Flying Circus. So, I like to take something and then sort of take it to the absurd extreme and see if it still holds up. So, obviously that doesn't fit for every genre or every play, but I love taking something and then just sort of pushing the envelope to the, if it's a little funny, if you say it this way and then you take it to the extreme, then maybe it'll hit even more.
I think in a world where everything is like quite serious at the moment, I think comedy is a kind of release for quite a few people. I mean, it's why sitcoms on television are so insanely popular, because people need a break from the realness of everything else, which is a kind of
Right.
where stuff like drama tends to, sometimes people will avoid it just because you think, I'm dealing with the serious and the depressing all day. I don't want to go and see it in the theater. And then lastly, before we move on, what's your standout moment? What's the moment in all the projects that you've ever been a part of that made you think, yeah, this is why I do this?
I wrote a play called Turbulence, which was about passengers meeting on an airline. And we did it in our local community theater, and they decided to take it to Michigan Act Fest, which is it's actually a national competition, but you compete at the state level and then it goes on to the regional and the national round. So our little community theater took my play Turbulence to Michigan Act Fest. And while it did not advance to the regional or national rounds, I was very pleased that it won the People's Choice Award as the audience favorite. And it was a lot of fun to perform. I was one of the offstage voices actually for the five character play. And just when that first laugh hit and the audience really got it, and then from there it just went, I could tell the people were loving it. That was the best.
So for now, we move on from our guest to our playwright and play for this week. Stuart Brown is a playwright living in Connecticut, USA. He's written a number of 10-minute plays, several of which have been performed in his local area. As well as being a playwright, Stuart is also a theatre critic, which, as he describes, was a big part of the inspiration for his play, The Wait. Stuart says, I occasionally attend a weekday matinee, which usually has a high attendance of senior citizens that aren't too mobile. This past summer, there was one such show in particular when my wife and I didn't move for 15 minutes or so. In real terms, this is a short time period, but when you're trying to exit a theatre, it can seem like an eternity. Theatrical Shenanigans presents The Wait by Stuart Brown.
That was so good, Spence. I can't believe you got tickets to the revival of Mamma Mia. It's one of my all-time favourite shows.
I'm a theatre critic. I get tickets to everything, even revivals to jukebox musicals.
Oh, come on. Don't tell me you don't like Mamma Mia. All those great ABBA songs.
The first, even the second time I saw it, I actually liked it. You're talking to someone who remembers when ABBA won the Eurovision Song Contest in 1974 with Waterloo. But I've seen the show so many times since its first West End runner, I'm bored.
Not me. Oh, this is my favourite part, when the cast comes out in these futuristic 1970s outfits and we get to boogie oogie oogie to the encore. Waterloo couldn't get
Oh, I hate this part. Okay, that's enough jiggling.
Oh, live a little.
No thanks.
Fine, suit yourself. Waterloo couldn't get
Are you through?
Yep, let's go.
Oh, we can't. We're in the death seats.
What are you talking about? These are great seats. Row G, centre orchestra. You can't get any better than these. I can't believe you got such sensational seats.
I'm a theatre critic. I don't get bad seats. That's the problem. They give me these seats instead of the bathroom seats.
I'm not really following you.
Well, you might think these are great seats, but now we're trapped. We have to wait for everyone to leave before we can get out of here. I prefer the bathroom seats, two on the aisle.
Why are they bathroom seats?
Because just as the curtain comes down for the interval, you can bolt out to the toilets. Hesitate and you're a dead duck. I'm usually the first person in the men's room. By the time I finish washing my hands, the line is snaking out the door. I think, as a woman, you can appreciate a quick dash to the ladies' room.
Amen to that.
The aisle seats also allow for a hasty retreat after the end of the show. I always stay to applaud and acknowledge the cast, but then I'm out of there. Timing is everything. If you judge correctly, you are easily the first ones out of the theatre. However, if you misjudge by just a few seconds, you end up in the situation we're in now, lingering while the masses exit the theatre.
It's not that bad.
Oh, mon ami, I've sometimes been stuck in place for 15, 20 excruciating minutes, just standing around waiting to get out. Scoping out the layout, the wind direction, a gentle northerly breeze, I would say our ETD is at least 15 15 minutes.
ETD?
Estimated time of dispersal. Let's see. Maybe we can cut across the aisles to the exits. No, I don't think that'll save us any time.
Why does it take so long?
Why does it take so long for passengers to disembark from a plane? You're dealing with people. Any time you factor in the human element, it's a crapshoot. They're the talkers who stand around and just chat, oblivious to the world around them. And then there are the fans who gum up the works, reliving their favourite moments again and again, blind to the fact that some of us want to leave.
Oh, anything else?
Let's face it. Today's theatre audience is comprised of the older spectrum of the population. They don't move as fast as they used to, and they aren't that nimble getting out of their seats.
Well, that's rather mean.
I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just stating the facts. Good for them, though. They are the ones keeping the theatre alive. You don't see a lot of younger people in the audiences nowadays. Go out of London to regional theatres and it's even more pronounced. I just hope theatres can figure out how to bring in new and diverse audiences, or its curtains.
Well, let's make the best of our time together. Talk to me.
Just talk to you? About what?
We haven't seen each other for a while. There must be some news that you have.
Okay. But you go first.
This isn't a game.
I know. So you start.
Why don't you tell me about some of the shows you've seen recently?
That's a question. That's not the start to a conversation.
A question can start one.
And after I answer that question, are you going to ask another that I then have to answer?
You're not good at small talk, are you?
Hate it. I prefer being an unobtrusive wallflower than a chatty natty.
Remind me why we're friends.
You like my rapier wit?
I don't think so.
My good looks.
Don't flatter yourself.
I get free tickets.
Ah, I guess so.
Oh, come on, people. Hey, watch your elbow. Ouch. Excuse me, I'm standing here. What's your hurry? We're all trying to leave. What's happened to civility? Oh, I need to be moving. I can't just stand here, hemmed in with no end in sight. I'm like one of those sharks that need to be in constant movement or I die.
What
are you doing?
Meditating. When I get anxious or need to show a little patience, I just meditate.
How can you be so calm? This is like a 10-mile backup on the motorway. All you can see is an endless sea of red lights. Nothing but red for as far as the eyes can see. The woods are lovely, dark and deep. But I have promises to keep. And miles to go before I sleep. And miles to go before I sleep.
You're quoting Robert Frost now. Don't you think you're exaggerating here just a teensy-weensy bit?
No, I think I'm being perfectly rational.
Are you seeing anyone for this?
I was seeing a therapist for a while, but he finally just told me to suck it up and don't bother making another appointment.
I wonder why.
Oh, water, water. I need water. Is it hot in here?
Give me a break. You go to the theatre a lot? I mean, a lot.
Probably 60, 70 shows a year, if you count the West End, fringe productions and shows in the provinces.
With all those shows, haven't you been in this situation before?
A few times.
And are you this crazed every time?
I don't remember the last time. I think I fainted and woke atop the concession stand with those little drink umbrellas covering my eyes.
What?
A friend told me she saw a picture on Instagram. She said it went viral. There were some interesting comments that were posted.
Are you feeling okay now?
I'm good. I think.
Just take a deep breath. We're almost out.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, and to run where the brave dare not go. Oh, sorry. When I get anxious, I start singing show tunes.
Oh, how appropriate.
That was another thing that annoyed my therapist. He hates musicals. At one time, people actually applauded me at a show and threw money. I think a video also went viral. Oh, what's taking so long?
How about if you dictate your review of the show to me? That should help pass the time.
Oh, good idea.
Let me get my phone. Ready?
I can't.
What's the problem? Well, just start talking.
The creative juices aren't flowing. I need to let the performance soak in, marinate for a while. Rome wasn't built in a day.
It's Mamma Mia, for God's sake.
I need to be in a syncopated harmony with the show before I begin moulding words and phrases into a carefully crafted critique of what is presented on the theatrical stage. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. At first, the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms.
I'm the one who's going to start retching. Are you listening to yourself?
But of course. I was a fairly good Shakespearean actor in my youth.
This whole thing is all much ado about nothing.
The passage is actually from As You Like It. I wonder if we climb on top of the seats, we could skip on over to the exit.
You're kidding.
I did it once. It didn't end well. A video appeared on a couple of social media sites.
Did that one go viral too?
Yes, it was the most popular one yet. I'll have to figure out how to monetize all this viralness.
Oh, I think the logjam has finally broken. Let's go.
Oh, hallelujah and praise the Lord.
Please, no quotations.
Suit yourself.
Oh, well, that was an ordeal. How about a drink? What time's the next show?
It's 4:30 p.m. now. Let me check my phone. Oh, damn these things. Right, got it. Early curtain at 7 p.m.
I think a few cocktails and dinner will help fortify us. Do you always do two shows in one day?
When my schedule permits.
What are we seeing again?
Something you can't shake your beauty to at the finale. A long day's journey into night.
Ah. Can you hum a few bars?
Well, I think Julie definitely deserves that drink at this point. That was Patrick Hibben as Spencer and Gilly Fick as Julie in The Wait by Stuart Brown. So, Tony, what did you think?
I really enjoyed the dynamic, the relationship between the characters. I think any good play that you can recognize either yourself or people that you know when you see the characters makes it very relatable. So I love the juxtaposition between the jaded theater critic and then his friend who was just happy to be there enjoying the show. So I really thought it especially for theater folks, everybody going to a play will be able to relate to this situation and to these characters.
I love The almost dryness of Spencer is just the whole, I do this all the time. Whereas Julie's just, as you say, really excited and happy to be there. So they're
Right.
so opposite to the point where it's a standard kind of comedy duos almost.
Sure. The grumpy old man and the
Sprightly young
enthusiast.
woman.
Right. And I guess I probably have to say that I could relate a little bit more to Spencer the critic, just because I've been in theaters where I have thought about, well, if I sit here, then I'm going to be able to get out more quickly. Or I admit that I have even climbed over seats at times to get around people who are not moving quickly enough. So that definitely hit home for me.
I think that's the key thing with it, though, is that you do get more invested into the characters and what they're saying because there is almost no action to it. They're both just kind of stood. I mean, obviously, Julie does her kind of dancing and clapping at the beginning, but otherwise, they're both just stood there, obviously waiting. So you are almost forced to take in who they are and what they're saying. And that is what makes the really greatest characters because you want to listen. There's nothing worse than no action and really boring characters.
Right. No, they definitely held your attention, which, as you said, that was the whole play, is just their dialogue while they're waiting.
The scenario itself is one that resonates with everybody. The idea of being in a queue, trying to get in or out of somewhere, and it just feels like you're barely moving is something so many people will be able to relate to. It's not, I know obviously the whole premise is of it being in a theatre, but you'll get people in the
Anywhere,
audience who
anywhere,
will,
yeah.
relate to it regardless and think, oh, I've been in a such a situation before.
So it reminded me of two different stories. One obviously would be Waiting for Godot, where the whole play is about two people waiting for something that never actually happens. And, when you say what is the play about, whether it's the wait or Waiting for Godot, it's not necessarily what happens, but it's how these characters relate to their situation and to each other when faced with, when faced with having to wait. So, and then the other thing that this reminded me of, I don't know if you recall, there was a Seinfeld episode, maybe like in their first or second season, called The Chinese Restaurant. The entire episode was the characters waiting for their table at a Chinese restaurant and basically never getting seated. So, again, I think that this playwright does a good job of relating to that situation of what do you do when you're forced to wait? Nobody likes to wait. Some people are better at it than others. How do you pass the time? And what does it say about you as a person about, your inability to just stand still for a few minutes?
Yeah, your queue etiquette, as we call it over here.
I don't think that's something that we have in America. I don't think there is any queue etiquette.
Was to say queuing is a big thing in England. There are rules to queuing, so to speak.
Yeah, we have a lot more pushers or obnoxious people or people who think that their time is more valuable and they shouldn't have to wait, so.
But it's also the way not they don't just interact with each other, but the way at one point Spencer interacts with the invisible people around him, I think is great because you can almost, especially with audio, you can almost picture it in your mind's eye. There'll be, say, some older people who maybe aren't moving fast enough for him, as you say, some pushy people who think their time's more important. I mean, if it's Mamma Mia, there's probably going to be a drunken hen party there somewhere.
Yeah, no, I did like that, the way he talked about the folks that were just the talkers, the folks that were oblivious to what was going on around them, and then the fans that wanted to just soak it all in and not leave a minute early and continue to dance like Julie there. So yeah, I think again that makes not only the characters relatable, but their surroundings even more relatable to the audience.
I very much related to his comment about the bathrooms. I've done that before when you get to the interval and it's like you know the interval is coming and you just think, you know what, I'm going to go 15 seconds
Yeah,
early.
definitely.
So yeah, we are drifting towards being out of time. But what's your overall opinion of the piece?
I think overall it does a good job of setting up a problem that can be solved within, the short duration of a 10-minute play, which you always want to have sort of a conflict, a beginning, a middle, and an end. I was a little concerned at first that I didn't know where it was going. And then when I realized, well, it's not necessarily going anywhere because the whole play is about waiting, then I kind of embraced the theme of it. So I started a little slow, but then I hooked into the characters and got a better sense of what they were about and why they were there.
Okay, well, we are out of time. Tony, thank you so much for being here and talking about this wonderful play and all the wonderful stuff that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure, Rachel. Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of another show. I hope you've enjoyed the play today, as well as my wonderful chat with Tony. And if you have, please make sure you give us a like, share, follow, or comment on our Facebook and Instagram page. You can also give the show a follow on Podbean or give us a rating on Amazon, Apple, or Spotify podcasts. I hope you can join us again in a fortnight when we have not one but two episodes, with the panel presents on the 4th of May and the next instalment of this series on the 5th. In the meantime, though, I've been Rachel Feeney-Williams. This is Theatrical Shenanigans, bring down the curtain and saying, I hope you can join us next time. Theatrical Shenanigans, part of an RFW Scripts production. Found on Spotify, Amazon Music, Podbean, and anywhere else you can find your podcasts. Music is written and produced by Chris Cody.